Hello, listeners. Welcome to PMHN Podcast, podcast dedicated to psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners, new and old hands. Overview of key CNS neurotransmitters, their receptors, functions, and symptoms of imbalance. Describes structural, CT, MRI, and functional EEG, MEG, PET, SPECT, brain imaging techniques, their advantages and limitations. Highlights advances in combined imaging methods. Discusses the importance of family history and pedigree analysis in assessing genetic risks for psychiatric or neurological disorders. I'm your host, James, and joining me is Dr. W.W.W. Taylor, a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner and educator. Have you ever wondered how those tiny messengers in our brain, neurotransmitters, can have such a huge influence on how we think, feel, and act? It almost feels like magic sometimes.
Thanks for having me, James. It's wild to think about, honestly. Neurotransmitters are the chemical messengers of the brain. They influence everything from mood and memory to muscle movement and attention. The way neurotransmitters are released, then quickly scooped back up through reuptake pumps, is like this intricate dance in our synapses. That recycling process doesn't just clean up, it actually controls how long signals last and how strong they are.
That makes me picture a busy subway system. With trains coming and going, if the trains pause too long, everything jams up. The brain's got to keep the traffic flowing smoothly for our thoughts and moods to stay on track.
Exactly. And when that system gets off balance, you can really see some dramatic effects, from movement issues to mood swings or even hallucinations in severe cases.
Speaking of dramatic effects, dopamine is always in the spotlight. People always mention it for pleasure, but there's so much more to it, right?
Totally. Dopamine isn't just about feeling good. It's deeply tied to thinking, decision-making, even fine muscle movements. When you're low on dopamine, things like impulse control and spatial reasoning really start to slip. Dopamine is tied to decision-making, reward-seeking, and fine motor control. Too little dopamine can contribute to Parkinson's disease or poor impulse control, while too much may cause tics, stereotypic behavior, or even disorganized thinking.
And at the extreme, low dopamine can even contribute to Parkinson's disease. But what happens when there's too much dopamine floating around?
That's when you might see things like disorganized thinking or stereotypic behaviors, like motor tics, creativity might get a boost. But too much can lead to chaos mentally and physically.
That actually reminds me, norepinephrine is another heavy hitter, especially when it comes to our energy and attention. And I imagine norepinephrine plays a role in alertness and fight or flight responses. What's its main gig in the brain?
Norepinephrine is like your internal alert system. It keeps you focused, helps you orient, and basically primes you for fight or flight when stress hits. Low levels can cause fatigue and depression, while high levels may trigger anxiety, paranoia, or hypervigilance. If you're dragging or feel dull, it could be because there's not enough of it around.
Flip side, if there's too much norepinephrine, people can get super jumpy or anxious, right?
Exactly. Think increased startle, paranoia, maybe even a loss of appetite. It's a fine line between being sharp and being overstimulated.
Funny you say fine line, because serotonin seems to be all about balance too, especially when it comes to mood and sleep.
Oh, for sure. Serotonin is like the body's mood thermostat. It regulates sleep cycles, mood states, pain perception, even things like aggression and libido. Too little, and you might feel irritable, depressed, or have trouble sleeping. Deficits are linked with depression, irritability, and sleep problems.
And if there's an excess?
Sedation, increased aggression, and sometimes even hallucinations, though thankfully those are rare. It's all about finding that sweet spot.
Let's shift gears to acetylcholine. It often gets overshadowed, but it's huge for memory and attention.
Absolutely. Acetylcholine is essential for learning new things, regulating REM sleep, and even keeping our muscles in tune. When levels drop, people might notice memory lapses or trouble focusing.
But if there's too much acetylcholine, it sounds like things can tip into anxiety or cause strange muscle movements.
Right, and sometimes even physical symptoms like drooling or those stiffness issues you see in movement disorders. It's another example of how the brain needs that perfect balance.
All this talk of balance makes me think of GABA and glutamate. They're like the brakes and gas pedal for the brain, aren't they?
That's a great analogy. GABA calms things down, reducing arousal and anxiety, When you're short on GABA, anxiety and even seizures can pop up. Too much, and you might feel a little too chill, sedated, or foggy.
And glutamate does the opposite, ramps things up and helps with memory, right?
Exactly. It's vital for learning, but too much glutamate can create anxiety, headaches, or even trigger seizures. The interplay between these two is what keeps our brain firing smoothly.
Now, let's shift to neuroimaging. These techniques let us look at the brain in action. I'm fascinated by how we can actually see what's happening in the brain now. Neuroimaging has really changed the game.
It has. Neuroimaging falls into three categories: structural, functional, and combined imaging. Structural imaging like CT and MRI shows the brain's size, shape, and anatomy. CT scans are relatively inexpensive and widely available, but MRIs give better detail, especially distinguishing gray from white matter. Functional imaging looks at activity, such as blood flow. PET scans and SPECT scans fall into this category, though they're more often used in research. EEGs and MEGs are less costly and measure electrical activity. Combined imaging, like functional MRI links structure with function, it's cutting edge, but still mostly used for research. With structural imaging like CT and MRI, we can check out the brain's anatomy, see if anything looks out of place. CT is like a quick snapshot, decent for big changes, but MRI gives us way more detail, especially near the skull.
But I've heard both methods have their trade-offs, like MRIs being tough for people with metal implants or claustrophobia.
That's true. And on the functional side, tools like EEG or PET scans let us see the brain in action. Tracking blood flow or electrical activity, it's like watching the brain's highlight reel in real time.
What surprised me most is that now researchers are combining those structural and functional images almost like layering a map with live traffic updates.
That's a perfect way to picture it. With things like functional MRI or even more advanced 3D mapping, we can see not just the shape of the brain, but what each part is actually doing while a person thinks or feels.
It's wild to imagine we might soon pinpoint exactly where a thought forms or what happens during a panic attack just by watching these scans.
We're getting closer all the time. It's mostly research right now, but as technology gets better, who knows how precise we'll get.
While we're talking about big picture tools, genetics is another piece, mapping out family trees to spot patterns in brain disorders.
Family history is honestly a goldmine for predicting risk. By tracking things like who had what illness, or even how relatives are related, we can estimate the likelihood of certain brain or mental health conditions showing up again.
That's why the Surgeon General recommends everyone know their family's history. It's not just trivia, it's real, actionable info. This has been incredibly insightful, Dr. Taylor. We've covered how neurotransmitters impact mental health, how imaging gives us a window into the brain, and how genetics helps shape care. Any final takeaway?
And those little pedigree symbols, they aren't just doodles. They actually tell us who's related, where the risk might come from, and help doctors make more informed decisions. Understanding genetics allows clinicians to personalize care, anticipate complications, and guide preventive strategies. And to our listeners, stay curious, stay informed, and we'll see you next time on PMHN Podcast. Bye for now.